WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. A city council meeting in Stanton is canceled as three members, including the mayor, decide to skip it. Meanwhile, Harrisonburg council meetings will go back to virtual sessions because of the latest surge of COVID-19. And we continue our series looking at Charlottesville's troubled city government. And the next General Assembly session gavels in today, and a new governor is sworn in Saturday, and we've got a preview. This is the WMRE Daily for Wednesday, January 12th. Despite a crowd of more than two dozen citizens at a scheduled city council meeting in Stanton Tuesday night, three of the council's seven members, including Mayor Andrea Oakes, skipped the meeting, and one of the four council members who attended, Carolyn Dull, attended virtually. WHSV and the Newsleader report that with just three councilors in the building, that prevented a quorum, and the meeting was canceled. Three council members had called the meeting to answer residents' questions about the plans to move the Augusta County Courthouse. Meanwhile, Harrisonburg's City Council will resume meeting virtually due to the most recent surge of COVID-19. Well, let's continue our series on Charlottesville's city government. A consultant who was asked to work with Charlottesville in its search for a new city manager walked away from the job, saying the city's government was the most dysfunctional he had ever seen. Now, two new members are on City Council. In the second part of a series from WMRA and Virginia Public Radio on Charlottesville city government, Sandy Hausman talked with them about how a new council could restore some order in the new year.
If rebuilding is the mission, Brian Pinkston could be the man. The newly elected member of Charlottesville City Council studied at a seminary and has a PhD in philosophy, but he also has an engineering degree from Georgia Tech and oversees major construction, repairs, and renovations at the University of Virginia.
The work that I've done, the way I've made my living over the last 30 years, involves being decisive.
That's not to say he won't be listening to citizen concerns, something he did a lot during the campaign.
I knocked on 3,700 doors. When you meet a person in their house or the neighborhood, it creates a level of empathy and a framework to understand why a person may be as angry as they are. If my kid, for instance, had been pulled over multiple times just because of the color of their skin, I would be pretty furious too.
And like one of his predecessors, Nakia Walker, he's anxious to attack systemic racism to provide affordable housing and improve policing in the city.
I am willing to put my time and effort and energy towards accomplishing the goals we've set for equity. We need to put money where our progressive mouth is.
That said, it's clear his tactics will be very different from Walker's. The same can be said of the other newcomer to council. His name is Juan Diego Ricardo Wade.
As far as I know, 100% African-American, but my father was taking the Spanish class in college at the time, so I hope he got an A.
Wade is the son of a minister and public school teacher who grew up in a big family where negotiation and compromise were key to survival.
Three boys and three girls. I like to tell people we're the Black Brady Bunch.
He got a master's degree in urban planning from UVA, is an administrator with Albemarle County, and served on the city's school board for 16 years.
When I got on the school board, the graduation rate for our students of color was in the mid-60s, and now it is in the high 90s.
He says he's ready to work towards similar success stories in the city and hopes council meetings will be boring. At the very least, Pinkston says there will be a different tone at those bi-monthly gatherings.
There's a lot of desire on each of our parts to close a chapter, turn the page, and show what good responsive governance can look like.
Ironically, they'll get some help in that vein from the pandemic. COVID has moved city council meetings to the internet, where a moderator keeps tight control over the public comment period. And those in virtual attendance are unable to interrupt with catcalls and obscenities. Former Councilmember Heather Hill adds that in spite of the noise at City Hall, Charlottesville has a good and reliable staff, which has gotten many things right. The removal of Confederate monuments, for example, and management during the pandemic should be counted as success.
A lot has been achieved, and too often we focus on, you know, what I call the Monday night lights, you know, when things kind of rile up in the public, versus a lot of great work that our staff has led.
And in fairness, she adds, Charlottesville is a small town dealing with big city problems, like affordable housing and effective policing.
I think that there's just so many things happening at a national level, and we are a microcosm of many of those things, but we have to remind ourselves we're still a city of less than 50,000 people.
In our next report, Randy Heggie explores the costs of chaos at City Hall and how Charlottesville will operate until it can hire a new manager. I'm Sandy Houseman.
And we will hear Randy's report tomorrow. On Monday, Governor Ralph Northam declared a state of emergency to help hospitals handle more patients due to the recent spike in coronavirus cases. Local hospitals have made their own changes to accommodate more patients, but so far, Omicron's impact has not been as stressful to their operations as the Delta surge was. The Randy B. Heggie reports.
More than 70,000 new COVID cases were confirmed in Virginia the week of January 1st, a new record in the pandemic. Positivity rates for PCR tests are also spiking. According to the Virginia Department of Health website, most localities in the Shenandoah Valley are trending between 30 and 45%. Neighboring outliers are Highland County, up at 63%, and Charlottesville, down at 25%. The CDC estimates that the Omicron variant now accounts for more than 93% of COVID cases in our region of the country, and local hospitals are seeing this variant's peculiarities play out in their emergency rooms. Dr. Reed Adams, UVA Health's chief medical officer, said in a press conference on Friday that they had 82 COVID patients in the hospital that morning.
About 25% of those are in the ICU, so that's a little bit different than we saw with the Delta surge, where it was more 50-50. The in and out flow of COVID patients is pretty rapid. With the Omicron patients, they often need to stay a few days rather than weeks, and so there's a fair amount of turnaround, but I would estimate that the vast majority are still unvaccinated. It's probably closer to 75 or 80%.
Adams said UVA Health has at times altered their elective surgery schedule, but so far has not had to halt those procedures.
I think the biggest impact is we have not been able to take as many transfers as we would like for those that need our help.
Sentara RMH in Harrisonburg is currently postponing elective surgeries. President Doug Moyer said they hope to resume them in a week or two, and his team will reevaluate that next Thursday.
It's hard to see, you know, what we'll see at that point in time. If our census is still high, we'll probably push it out another week.
He said that allows the hospital to reassign staff to care for COVID patients, although at this time they have not had to convert any additional physical space to COVID wards. As of Monday, Sentara RMH had 59 COVID patients, which accounted for about one-third of their total hospitalized patients.
At this time, even with where our projections are showing that we will go, you know, we'll be within our licensed bed capacity. I don't think it will be outside of our capabilities, but it is an extremely taxing event when you get that many COVID patients in the building.
According to a press release issued Monday, Augusta Health had 40 COVID patients, and their ICU and respiratory care units are staying at or near capacity, although they're still able to perform elective surgeries at this time. 12 people have died of COVID there over the past week. When it comes to vaccine efficacy against the Omicron variant, UVA's Dr. William Petrie said he's looking at data from the United Kingdom.
They're a little bit ahead of us with Omicron. And what they found is that unboosted, the mRNA vaccines are providing about 30% protection from infection. And that goes up to 70% with a booster. The Moderna booster seems to be providing, you know, long-term protection at that 70% level. And the Pfizer booster appears to be drifting off a bit, like at about 4 months or so. Protection from hospitalization is much better with the vaccines, with or without the boosters, really. And what we've seen is that being vaccinated in itself reduces your risk of being hospitalized or dying from COVID about tenfold.
Healthcare providers at both UVA and Sentara RMH urge those with mild COVID symptoms to go somewhere other than an emergency department to get tested, such as a pharmacy, family doctor, urgent care center, or by using an at-home rapid test. If you do test positive and your symptoms worsen, Petrie offered advice on when it's time to go to the hospital.
Shortness of breath is the thing that is probably most concerning. You can get a home pulse ox monitor. The drugstore sells them, you can get it on Amazon, and you can follow your oxygen saturation, and it should be about 95%.
He said if it falls to the very low 90s or high 80s, and you're feeling short of breath, hospitalization may be necessary to provide supplemental oxygen and intravenous COVID treatments. For WMRA News, I'm Randy B. Heggie.
And you can learn more about that story at WMRA.org. Dr. Danny Avula recently stepped down as vaccination coordinator for all of Virginia, but he still heads the health districts in Richmond and Henrico. Avula says hospitalizations for COVID-19 are the highest they have ever seen.
This is the moment for us to recognize that our healthcare infrastructure is really struggling and to continue to take these steps of caution.
Avula spoke with reporters at Richmond City Hall on Tuesday. He said the best protection against COVID-19 and its variants is still getting vaccinated. Overwhelmingly, those being hospitalized for serious illness are unvaccinated. Avula says it's time to get back to the basics of wearing masks and getting tested to cut down on rampant community spread. According to data from the Virginia Hospital and Healthcare Association, more than 3,800 people across the Commonwealth are hospitalized with COVID-19 symptoms or in the hospital awaiting test results. Dominion Energy wants to withdraw a proposed customer rate hike that would cover enrollment in a climate change initiative. The Richmond Times-Dispatch reports the move comes after Governor-elect Glenn Youngkin pledged to pull Virginia out of the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, also known as REGI. Youngkin recently said he would use executive action to withdraw from that program, but an official opinion released Tuesday by outgoing Attorney General Mark Herring says that the governor does not have the power to undo legislation passed by the General Assembly. In a statement, Herring's office touted the benefit that REGI has provided for climate change programs in Virginia. Education is one of the top issues that Virginians want lawmakers to focus on during the upcoming legislative session. A new poll released by the L. Douglas Wilder School at Virginia Commonwealth University shows that out of 800 adults surveyed, about 80% felt that attending school remotely results in K-12 students falling behind. Another key legislative issue the poll highlighted was the economy. About a quarter of respondents said they felt Americans are reassessing their lives and priorities in terms of work and family. The General Assembly gavels into session today, and a new governor will be inaugurated this weekend. Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope has a preview.
For the last 2 years, Democrats have held the trifecta, the executive branch, as well as both the House and the Senate. Now, Virginia is about to enter a new era of divided government, where Republicans control the executive mansion and the House, while Democrats control the Senate. Jatia Wrighton at Virginia Commonwealth University says she'll be watching to see if Republicans are able to roll back the accomplishments Democrats made when they were in power.
The Democrats, for the past couple of years, have really ushered in some pretty progressive policies. And I'm not certain if the incoming General Assembly will push back on a lot of these progressive policies.
Like legalizing marijuana, ending the death penalty, increasing access to voting, and even new environmental regulations. Republicans in the House might want to roll back those new laws. But Jennifer Victor at George Mason University says political parties often decide what issues they'll support based on opposing the other side.
It's a very antagonistic form of politicking that is unfortunately quite common across state legislatures, and it's one of the unfortunate consequences of our partisan and polarized era that we're living through. It's quite dysfunctional from a policymaking standpoint.
So set your expectations low, she says, because Democrats in the Senate will probably end up blocking most of the major changes Republicans in the House are hoping to make. Michael Pope.
Finally, today, this week also marks the final days in office for Governor Northam. He will give his last State of the Commonwealth address Wednesday night. Northam has highlighted how one of his accomplishments was attracting companies such as Amazon to the Commonwealth, while also pursuing progressive policies.
I had one of the most progressive administrations that Virginia's ever seen. And at the same time, we have a stronger economy than Virginia's ever seen. So it's proven that both can happen at the same time.
Northam's final State of the Commonwealth address is Wednesday evening at 7. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening. Stay safely connected and enjoy your Wednesday.